Succession number 26844, Reel 6.
Artillery, yeah.
What's the next thing? We've got you. You've landed and you're moving toward... You're trying to join up with the artillery.
Artillery, yeah.
What's the next thing that happened?
Well, after the shelling and I'd got out of the ditch and hugged this bloke and he hugged me and we had a good laugh about it. I did eventually find my way to the where the artillery was based and then was told to not to unload the artillery, just keep it on. Because you know, we might be moving up. We moved up after a short time and I unloaded and then I'm a bit foggy as to what happened there. There was just lots of running about and lots of things going on. And I think we were then attached to the Royal Engineers in making the roads good. This was in within the bridgehead, which was, I suppose, one of the jobs they'd brought the tippers on for, you know. And we were confined to that. And,
so what were you actually doing? We
just tried picking up loads of rubble and rocks and bricks and assisted by Pioneer Corps and taking them to where the roads perhaps had been shelled, tipping all the bricks into that to fill the holes up so that the, you know, the roads were all usable. And I think that we were doing quite a lot of that, just running backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards to wherever the bricks were. But the Pioneer Corps were with us then and riding in the truck and on the truck, and we was always under the direction of the engineers. And that seemed to be our main job for until the breakthrough came.
Now, what can I ask you a few questions? What yeah. about sort of the life? Where were you actually living during that period?
On the, living in the in
where were
the,
you based?
Well, I don't know, somewhere not far from Caen, I believe we were. You know, Tilly Sassels and some of these names come back to me, but I can't really remember.
No. Did you have a tent or
under the truck. Just slept under the truck. It was summer and that's okay, wasn't it? We could sleep outside. And we were used to that anyway, you know, we weren't used to beds and things.
And what about the food? I mean, it would be slightly different from...
Well, yeah, again, I mean, it's all sort of meat and vegetables and corned beef and bully. And then they did set up field kitchens, because I say we were with the RE, so they fed us. You know, which wasn't bad, really. And the Pioneer Corps, you know, they fed us in the Pioneer. Quite a big kitchen was set up there. And yeah, we didn't do too bad for food. And, you know, you can't expect to dine at a Ritz in them conditions, and you're just pleased to get some food and, you know, a drink of tea and things like that. So, no, not too bad at all.
And not under fire too much at that stage?
Sorry?
Not under fire that much?
Oh, no. There were little spasmodic bits of firing, but there was a quiet period for a while, wasn't there, for a few weeks, you know. I think we were, is it stabilising the position or something they called it then, you know, stabilising. And then when we started to move up, because we moved through the Falaise Gap. Yeah, so the bulldozers were pushing the German and tanks and armoured cars, trucks, whatever, they pushing it all off the road so that we could move forward. I mean, as well as the cattle, there must have been 4 or 5 mile of trucks and things, old German trucks. Tremendous. And
what was the problem with the cattle?
Well, the cattle had been killed and just all blown. Their bodies were inflated, and some of them had. Burnt, I don't know what some reaction to whatever it was eaten or whatever, and they burst some of them, and that's where the smells were, and they were pretty awful, the smells. So, but through the Falaise Gap, and then, must have been with the engineers for some while then, and then
the next doing what?
Well, again, helping them, carrying pioneers sometimes to building Bailey bridges, and we'd done was laid the approaches to these bridges and whatever was needed. And then I can remember going through Brussels, and we went through Brussels at quite an early date, really, because the people were still in the streets waving, Union Jacks and jumping up and down, and we stayed in a bonded warehouse there for a couple of nights, and lots of champagne, and some of the people who could drink a bit were they thought they'd ended up, they was killed and landed up in heaven, I believe.
And what was the reception like from the Brazilians?
Oh, they were wonderful, yeah. The Belgians were most generous people, and they, you know, wanted to all shake your hand all the time, and they were pretty wonderful people. We must have been there for 3 or 4 days, I suppose, and then we moved up there. Somewhere along the line here, we changed vehicles.
It says there's a bomb. Is it a bombed warehouse or bonded warehouse?
Bonded warehouse.
All right, okay, yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's where we were staying, in a bonded warehouse with so much champagne and stuff. But I mean, I don't like champagne anyway, but because a lot of them, well, there were so many other things in their drinks, and I don't think the Belgians in charge of it were too bothered about drinking. But, you know, there you are. That's people's hobby of drinking. That's okay, isn't it? Then we moved from there. Where did we go from there now?
It says...
moved up through to Holland, I believe, did we?
It says Eindhoven and Nijmegen.
Oh, yeah. Because some time went by, and then the Arnhem thing came about, and we moved through... I don't know whether we went through Eindhoven, or whether, because that was still occupied by the Germans, or whether we went round Eindhoven, but we finished up at a place called Grave. With a big bridge over there, I think, is it the River Maas there, or one of the rivers, big rivers there? And I can remember with the airborne gliders all going over one day, you know, terrific noise in the sky and all these stuff. And this was the start of the Arnhem thing. Well, a couple of days after they went, we moved up to Nijmegen, just outside Nijmegen. I think it was called the Reichswald Forest.
I think that's later, because that's Germany.
Oh, is it? Oh, well, okay. So, well, we stayed in a... We stopped at Nijmegen. I don't remember. I suppose we was loaded up with whatever we had on, ready to go up, move over into Germany through Arnhem and Elst and Arnhem. I know once or twice we went up to Elst, which was on the road to Arnhem, and perhaps unloaded. And then some of our trucks also ran back to pick up supplies, and one of them, George Chevis, he was on his way back, and the Germans closed the road, and he's come back. His truck was pretty beat up when he got back. But old George was all right. So they closed the Nijmegen road from Eindhoven to Nijmegen, to close the road there, and... only for a few days we were stuck off, but I know that there was all preparations for us to dig holes where we were and all sorts of other things in case we had to defend it. But with them little old Sten guns, I don't know what it would have been much good.
Were you armed at that? Is that what you were armed with by then?
Oh, we had a Sten gun.
Tell us about the Sten guns. What did you think of it? Had you had any training in it, that sort of thing?
We've probably been given the guns and said, well, this is how it works, but... We was always warned not to bang, if we had the safety catch off, not to bang the butt of it, because it would start firing. And of course, being wanting to experiment, because we all tried this sort of thing. But I suppose it was it gave us some security, but what not a very...
Had you had a chance to fire it and to practice with it?
I think we must have done, yeah. I think they must have said, oh, we'll fire it, you know, because they seemed to think it was a great little thing, but I don't know what it was good for, because it didn't have a very, very big range.
And were you on with anything else, or was that it?
No, that was it. That was it. We only had a Sten gun, yeah.
Now, so what happened next then?
Well, by then there was some threat amongst the people who know about these things, that the Ardennes thing might be starting. So... What the plan was to build a bridge over to the Juliana Canal at a place called Ermond in Holland so that the extra traffic could be moved through quickly to the Ardennes if the threat increased. Well, whilst we went there, I don't know what we did, perhaps we carried some bits of bridge around there for them, but while we were waiting in Ermond, which was for two or three days, the Americans come over and decided they was going to bomb the bridge that the engineers were nearly completed.
Now, was that by deliberate or accidental, I presume?
Well, it was accidental. Oh, yeah, it couldn't have been deliberate. But, you know, the thing was that puzzled, I spoke to afterwards, that the Juliana Canal was entirely in the hands of the Allied forces. So, I mean, the Americans, with a little bit of map reading, could have seen, well, it can't be in their hands, it must be ours. But, of course, as later history has proved, that this friendly fire business was typical of the Americans.
Were you there when the... Do you remember the...
I was there when the bombing came.
What did you see?
They knocked down two houses. And these... I mean, I must think the pilots were pretty brave because they really dived down and let their bombs go pretty low. And then I could hear the sergeant in charge of these... Both as guns, they were protecting the bridge, you know, which only fired a small 2-pound shell. And they were firing these shells up at them, and I can hear the sergeant calling out, "Stop firing, the silly bastards, they're ours." So, of course, then they stopped firing. And I think that the Americans must have sussed something then, because suddenly they stopped and flew off. By some strange coincidence, when the war was over and I went to Guildford to be demobbed, I was standing up waiting to get my uniform. This is November 46, and I was lining up to get my uniform, and I heard this voice, and I went up and said to him, "This sergeant, I said, I know your voice." So he said, "Where do you know me from?" I said, "Well, what about this then? Stop firing, the silly bastards are ours." And he just collapsed in laughter. I said, "Oh, you remember that? That was Armand." And so we had a bit of a chat. And he said to me, you know, they did send some communications to the American forces about what happened, but never received any reply or anything from them. I suppose this was the way the Americans found that it would all go away. So, at any rate, the bridge was eventually built. The Ermond is near Maastricht. And some of our company, that's where they were in other places around here. But the people in Ermond were lovely people, and they looked after us as well. And I made friends, quite good friends, with a couple there, and a middle-aged couple, and always promised to go back after war, but never did do. But often wondered out. In fact, I've still got their photo and their card. Often wonder how they come. Perhaps one day that I might go back, but they'll be gone by now anyway.
And what exactly did they do that was so friendly? I mean,
well, Ermond is in the province of, I can't think of the name of the province, but one of the things they make is called vlaai or fly, which is a big tarts with fruit, you know, with fruit in them or whatever, you know, and I think vegetables in them as well. And they was always feeding us with them, always somebody to bring out them, you know. And no, they were excellent. Well, because, you know, they'd had a bit of a bad time in the Dutch. Of course they was pleased to see us, and, you know. And what was remarkable, how many Dutch people spoke English? That's what we always thought was terrific. So many people spoke English that you could have been back in England, really.
So what's next? The next thing you've got here is a trip back to Antwerp.
And a V2. We had left there.
Was this you or the unit?
Well, I think there was about four trucks. Four or six trucks were at Ermond, not many. Then I believe we moved around to a place called Overesch. That was in Belgium. That was a convent school.
That's before Antwerp, is it?
I think it was while I was there that I had to go up to Antwerp, and that's when I got my first experience of V2s. I'd gone to the docks to load up something, I can't remember what I'd gone to get. I was on my own then. Gone to the docks, and whilst I was in the docks, there was a couple of big bangs, and then I was told, well, you know, that's the V2 rockets, and which I wasn't very happy with. I thought I'd got away from a bit of this. And I drove back to Antwerp, and while I was driving through, there was a big explosion, a cut to 300 yards ahead, and it was called the Rex Cinema, I think it was.
You
called.
Actually saw that, didn't you?
Well, I think it must have been that one, because when I read about it afterwards, you know, the
I think that's September, that one. But that's how
was
you.
Was it September?
How big an explosion was it? I mean, what was
oh,
it?
Oh, well.
What do you remember of the?
Well, it was a great big bang up in front of me. And I could see bricks and everything flying about, and I just put my foot down in that old vehicle and went up. So that was in September, was it? So where am I then? I've come to...
You're in December. So, wasn't necessarily... I mean, unless you specifically remember it was the Rex Cinema.
Well, I know that somebody said to me it was a cinema afterwards, you know. And there was a couple of 100 people killed in it. I don't know where. Where would I have heard that from?
No idea. You know. So what happened next then? You're at Overesh, basically.
Overesh in Belgium. And waiting for the Ardennes thing to push. The weather was awful, actually.
Tell us about the weather. How bad was
it? Well, it was terrible. The snow was awful and... these old trucks were sliding all over the place. We were only doing short runs to generally build up bases. I believe going to a Rowlett somewhere and picking up stuff. And
What was it like? I mean, you've done the desert. What was it like driving in the snow? Did you have the proper things you needed, chains and
stuff? Oh, no, we didn't have anything like that. No, you just had to go bloody careful. I mean, we didn't have... some of us have been driving before in England... I mean, we had snow in England, and we didn't have chains or any help there. We just had to drive carefully. That's all.
It wasn't too bad then.
Well, no, there was lots of lorries sliding down hills, and you'd done a few slips and slides yourself. But no, that's okay. Yeah.
So what happened next? You were taking ammunition forward to the US troops, couldn't you?
Oh yeah, at one time, yeah, we took a lot of ammo forward to the US troops, and. Yeah, they had some big bases there. And of course, one of the things we were warned about was that a lot of Germans were dressing up as American soldiers. And, you know, if anybody was waving us off the road or whatever, you know, two or three people on their own, don't take any notes and just go to where you've got to go. And that was the right thing to do.
But you never encountered that yourself?
No, I never encountered it. If I did, I just struck to instructions. Like to go to such and such a map reference, and that's where I would go. Although, because after a couple of days, we knew where to go anyway, so, there was no danger of that anyway. But that was instilled upon us, and no way are we to be misdirected or whatever, you know, with people in American uniforms.
So the next thing seems to be, unless there's anything else, when you got your new Ford trucks instead of these tip-up trucks, I presume.
Oh, yeah, then we now, I'm just getting a bit mixed up there. What's sort of time we're talking about now?
January.
January 45.
Yeah.
January 45. And the war ended in May, didn't it, in 45?
Yeah, the next note you've got is the new Ford trucks.
Yeah. Now, while we was at Overesh, we were given new... Here we got new Ford trucks, but they were a source of... quite a lot of aggravation because the cylinder head gasket kept on blowing. And there was the wrong grease in the wheel hubs. So we had quite a lot of vehicles at times off the road.
And these were worse than the tip-up trucks?
Sorry?
These were worse than the tip-up trucks then?
Well, the tip-up trucks weren't any great problems mechanically. Did I give that impression? This was a mechanical fault with the engine. You understand cylinder head gaskets, do you? Yeah.
But that's in the Ford.
That was in the Ford. But we didn't have that in the tipper, but we changed to Fords and then had this trouble with the cylinder head gaskets.
And how was it resolved? I mean, was it resolved?
Well, we used other types of gaskets, and I think they got round in the end to getting copper and asbestos gaskets. Which done the job, and then the grease. And there was a member of the Ford company came over and sorted some of the things out. We weren't too... Well, I wasn't too involved. You know, your truck goes off the road, and you just have to... They give you another truck, or you wait about for a day or so, you know.
So what happened next then? Because I mean, they start moving into Germany in March 45. What do you remember of that period? There's no notes here for anything.
No. Well, I think we went over Wesel. I think we went over. Would we cross the river at Wesel? Wesel. I remember a long floating Bailey Bridge. Driving over a long floating Bailey Bridge. I think it was at Wesel. Wesel, I think. And we was into Germany. And we was in Dusseldorf and...
What were you doing in Germany?
Well, again, just we had three-ton trucks then. Well, running supplies forward, ammunition or petrol, whatever wanted doing. You know, we were a general transport company, but a lot of this time is what makes it difficult to remember is that we were on detachments and we weren't with our company. We might be posted for a couple of days to the engineers or 2 weeks, 4 weeks with the artillery. You know, we just went with the Ordnance Corps. One time I had a week taking some American troops, transporting American troops, down to, I think it was the Harz Mountains. I had two or three trips of that, taking them down there. So, no, we just went anywhere. I mean, I remember one of our trucks was even posted to Prince Bernhard, you know. So that's what makes it so difficult to remember specifically what we were doing and who we were with.
But you didn't have a co-driver, did you still?
Oh, no, we still... Oh, no, we
always just
on
one
own,
man?
Yeah. Just on our own. Just on our own, yeah.
Now, how did you get on with the German civilians, if you saw much of them? At least before the war ended, I mean.
Well, I think we was a bit wary of them. I think... knowing what they were capable of doing, I think we were pretty wary of them. And of course, there was a no fraternisation thing that was very strong in the army then. At that particular time, you know, we were under instructions, you mustn't fraternise with the Germans. I don't think they particularly wanted to know us either, you know, because they were probably a bit apprehensive of what we were going to do to them.
So you stuck to the North. I mean, you made no effort to contact them.
No, none at all. No, none at all. No.
So what do you remember next? You're doing these, going to these various units, doing this and that.
Yeah.
Anything
yeah.
else before the end of the war?
No, not really. I mean, I can't even remember where I was when the war ended. I can't, for the life of me, remember where I was or what circumstance it was when the war ended.
Any particular celebrations? You might remember that.
No, I don't remember anything about the war in Germany ending. I must have been on another planet, I think. But I can't... I've tried to find out what happened and what didn't, but I can't get any clues as to where we were. I could have been moving raw mail about, you know, sometimes we done, not army mail, you know, sometimes we carried army mail, and I could have been carrying that and on my own or just one truck with a raw mail unit, army mail unit.
Did you do a lot? What was the job of carrying mail? How was it sorted out?
Oh, I don't know. We used to pick up bags and, you know, I don't know really. Pick up bags. We did at one time pick up quite a lot of bags from Brussels Airport. We used to go back to Brussels airport. One time we did that. And then, there was other trucks that used to bring things forward to us because we were known as forward transport and bring to us, and they would dump it somewhere and then we'd take it forward, you know.
So what do you remember next? It seems you went to Bad Meinhof.
No, then, well, we did finish up when the war ended. We moved to a place in Germany called Bad Nendorf, which was near Hanover, and a spa town, which was quite a nice place to be in. So we ended up at Bad Nendorf. That was in when the war ended in May, and we must have been there soon after war ended, probably June. Probably in June we went there. In May or June, anyway. We were there pretty soon after the war ended. We was in Bad Nendorf. And again, our jobs were just running about. I mean, we used to do a run up to, I think, Nuremberg, and another one up to Bremen, Hamburg we used to run to.
Carrying what?
Well, whatever, you know, probably not so much ammunition then. We did do a lot of dumping of German, we did carry a lot, at one time, a lot of German ammunition to various dumps, but I can't remember where that was.
Now, what about the convoys to Berlin? Yeah, tell me about them.
The big thing that I remember quite well was the convoys to Berlin. We'd done about four of them. We used to go to Brunswick, go from Baden Endorf to Brunswick, load up and be checked out and all sorts of other things. And on the second day, we would drive through to Berlin to Spandau, through Helmstedt. But at the first couple of times, there was no border control at Helmstedt, but after, I think by the third or fourth trip, they'd got proper border controls in the Russians had, because we was entering the Russian sector of Germany, or East Germany as it became, didn't it? And so we'd run up to Berlin to Spandau Barracks, where we'd stop the night in Spandau Barracks. The next day, the third day, we would go out and unload and make our way back to camp. The fourth day, we'd probably do some maintenance on the truck and then start again on the next day. So it was about a four-day turnaround then. One of the trips that I remember most was that we got to Brunswick and we'd told to go to this refrigeration plant and we was loaded with sides of beef. So we'd done what we normally done, drove up to Berlin, and then when we was in Spandau Barracks, a Russian officer came into the barracks with his escorted, etc. And he came in with a couple of truckloads of Russian troops, and then we were told that we were taking this beef to the Russian sector where there was the only refrigeration plant in Berlin working at the time. So we were each allocated one of these Russians, and I said to the Russian officer who spoke perfect English, I said, oh, what's his name? And he said, oh, we said, don't bother to talk to him. He said, he's only a peasant and he won't understand what you're saying, which I thought was pretty bloody awful, really. So anyway, so he sat next to me, his rifle very much on the alert, or his gun very much on the alert, and stern face, didn't smile or anything. Anyway, got into there and offloaded the beef and back to Spandau. But that was one of the memories I had of them trips.
Overall, how did you get on with the Russians? I mean, was there a feeling of tension, or was it, I mean, were they your allies?
I think there was a feeling of tension. There was more communication between us and the Germans probably than what there were with us and the Russians, because I suppose we had no language in common, and I think they always looked so aggressive. They didn't smile very much, you know. They didn't. Well, you know, they had a bad old time, hadn't they? So I probably thought they were making fine about it. And I think at times viewed us as intruders, you know, because they'd taken Berlin, and what are you troops doing here? This is only I'm only surmising these things, but, you know, these are the sort of things that came across at the time.
Now, what about the state of Berlin, of the big towns, you know, that have been bombed and fought over so badly? What were your impressions of the state?
Well, Hamburg was a hell of a mess, but, I mean, you know, it seemed to me at the time, it's worse than London, with the vast open spaces. Bremen as well, that had a bit of a bombing. Hanover wasn't too bad. Brunswick wasn't too bad. One thing that we had to do, what was at Nendorf, I think it was in, the Hermann Göring Steelworks, I think that was in Hanover, it was Hanover or Brunswick, the Hermann Göring Steelworks, great big steelworks, where the Pioneer Corps were, and we took our trucks down there and gave them driving instructions for 2 or 3 weeks. One of the things we've done there, which none of us look forward to, because, you know, you're sitting on the other side of a 3-ton truck and you can't do a lot really to reach across, and some of them, of course, should never have been driving at all, but they was all put for, or they'd all put forward for these driving courses.
And any success with it?
Oh yeah, some of them were quite good, but I mean some of them, because shouldn't have done that, you know. But, you know, I didn't blame them for putting themselves forward. Why not?